Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 177 on investing in real estate with no money down with Chris Prefontaine. If you're into building wealth through real estate investing, you are in the right place. My goal here is to invite high caliber guests, real estate investors, and other industry service providers onto the show, and then to draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods used to create millions of dollars or more in the business of real estate. So as we record this episode in late 2020, the real estate market throughout the U.S. is severely constricted with regard to inventory, mostly due to the current COVID economy situation pandemic that's ongoing and hopefully resolving here coming up in the next 6 months to a year or so. We shall see. But as an ongoing trend, I've been selecting my guests throughout the U.S. To come on the show and offer us here on the REI Diamond Show insights on different markets around the country, as well as the strategies that are currently working particularly well in those markets. And in these unique times, with the market changing as fast as it has over the past year, staying nimble with our investing and adjusting as needed along the way to succeed, no matter if the inventory swells and pricing goes down, you know, over the next 6 months to a year, or the exact opposite occurs and the inventory remains extremely tight with pricing continuing to climb and even skyrocket. And I don't know, it could go either way, looking down here at the near future. And while I don't suggest trying to copy every technique that you hear about on the show, I do suggest paying attention to and knowing what might work so that you can rip off and implement the strategies that do work in your local market as needed. Anyway, for today's episode, I've invited returning guests. Some longtime listeners may recognize the name Chris Prefontaine, and he joins us once again to discuss the no money down real estate deals where he averages profits of $75,000 per deal and up. And my goal in having Chris on the show again is to get the real-time update on whether structuring terms deals with no money down is still even a viable option in this overheated, very low inventory real estate market. Of course, if you're listening to this episode at a point in the future, please know that your time will be well invested to continue listening right now to this episode, as this is not just a time-sensitive report on the current, you know, 2020-2021 real estate market with COVID going on, but instead you're about to hear a broad overview on how to do no money down deals with a longer term time horizon than flipping houses, with average profits per deal of $75,000 or more, with very low, near zero monthly marketing costs. Sound too good to be true? Let's allow Chris to tell it. All right. Welcome back to the REI Diamond Show, my friend, Chris Prefontaine. Good to have you here today. Well,
yeah, I'm psyched to be here again, Dan.
Nice. So let's begin with a snapshot of your current business. Some of the listeners who've been with us a while remember you and the family coming on the show, and we've talked terms deals in the past. Exciting topic, huge deals. But, you know, we're at a new era. I think we're in a historic moment right now. You know, it's the end of 2020. By the time this goes live, it'll be 2021. As far as like real estate prices and the uniqueness in the market. So can we begin with a little snapshot of your current business operation? Like, what are the markets that you and your associates are currently doing deals, and about how many, you know, per month are you guys moving altogether?
Yeah, we're still, as a family company, myself and my son and son-in-law are in Rhode Island, Massachusetts in Rhode Island, and then Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, sorry. And then we have associates all over North America, mostly United States, probably represents around 25 different states. We're doing about 25 to 30 deals a month now. Pre-COVID, we were somewhere around 8 to 15. So it's been quite busy since right around April 1st.
and was April 1st. I mean, we were mostly, I don't know about Rhode Island. Were you guys kind of in lockdown April 1st into May, or did you guys not have to deal with restriction in your business?
Yeah, we did. So we have an office building we bought on terms, coincidentally, but we had an event coming up April 1st, and about 2 weeks prior to it, we had a pivot, go virtual, then shut the office down. So we ran it from the office instead of a hotel. And then, we've been virtual since then. Somewhere in the summertime, we went back to the office on Mondays. Most of us are virtual. It's just that I'm 5 minutes from my office, so I pop in there on Mondays. But we're still running things all over the country. You know, the staff's all over the country now. It's given us the opportunity to add some great staff members that aren't local, which is a benefit.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it was very interesting. Our business is Chicago, it's Philadelphia, it's Atlanta. And Atlanta, you know, kind of shut down, but real estate was a necessary service. I forget what the term they actually had for us. So Atlanta sort of kept running along. People really, I mean, yeah, there was people who were like in fear of the pandemic, but I would say like a fear level scale of 1 to 10. Atlanta was probably a 5. Chicago was probably a 7, and Philadelphia was probably an 8. And in Philadelphia, even construction was shut down. So, like, we were trying to rehab houses, and people rehabbing houses weren't allowed. But that would fly in Chicago, and it would fly in Atlanta. And, yeah, we were, you know, kind of shut down, and we closed a few deals during the shutdown during that period. But here we are at the end of the year, and we've got 260 deals closed. I think we did 223 last year, and, you know, the net actually grew as well. Our business has been like 50% growth this year, 50% growth last year, and like 35% the year before that. So, yeah, probably a good chunk of that is our team maturing, our business and our systems, and maybe you relate to some of that too, kind of getting better at our own craft. Some of that was probably this superheated, I don't know if we might say somewhat frothy bubble in the real estate market with the prices going up and the supply artificially, you know, held down or not. I mean, maybe you'd want to talk to that a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, because typically in the terms market, you'd think that if the market was screaming hot, that there'd be less sellers looking to do terms deals, lease purchase, owner financing like we do in sub two. So it's strange. It's very unpredictable because with the prices being the way they are and with the market being screaming hot and buyers gobbling up property, we still have the demand. The only thing I can point to is, yeah, the bank rates are low, as you know, but the bar, so to speak, to qualify, they've raised that bar. So they've pushed a lot of buyers out of the market, especially the jumbo loans. So we're literally seeing in some of our markets with our students, where a house was on, I have one on top of my mind. One house was on in Colorado for $1.3 million. Gentleman went to the closing table. Long story short, they said, nope, need more reserves, need more down payment. Like, they changed all the rules on them that week. It was during the mess at the beginning. That same buyer found their way to us because we put the home under agreement after that and then bought the home on terms.
Gosh.
Same one. And so it's a shame they're getting pushed out. They're great
buyers.
They just need time now.
How about that? That is crazy. A mind-boggling example right there where you guys end up getting to put yourself in the middle. Are you comfortable to share some of the details of that? I mean, it was supposed to go to closing at 1.3. What did the deal look like when you guys eventually earned a piece?
I think the seller, because he was on the market prior to that, so more of an expired listing arrangement. When we talk to sellers like that, our conversation is usually, what did you expect to get? And the number's somewhat, you know, a lot south of the 1.3 because they figure negotiation, they figure commission. So I think we probably built in the 1.3 or maybe 1.3. I think it was slightly higher, like 1.350, but still pulled out over six figures on that. And the seller's tickled pink. The buyer is thankful, as you can imagine, for getting the pathway now to just save up some more money and save up reserves. It's okay. The credit was already great. And we're happy. So it's a win-win-win. And so, again, it's very unpredictable. People say, what's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen? The billionaires don't know what's going to happen right now.
Yeah, you're right about that. Can we talk about the, you know, brief connection of the paperwork there? Like, I'm guessing it's probably a lease option and then another lease option on the other side. Or what was it? Were they holding paper? Like, how was that actually structured, the 1.3?
Okay, that one was a lease purchase. So what we'd call in Colorado, it's okay to do a sandwich lease. So we did a sandwich lease there. That we have another one here by us on Cape Cod that was actually, we bought it owner financing from a realtor, Dan. I mean, so there's crazy stories there. I mean, this is a realtor in Boston who couldn't sell her home on the water, beautiful, on a bluff overlooking the ocean. We bought that home owner financing, little to nothing down in principal payments monthly from a realtor who couldn't get it sold. So it's just, I'm seeing doctors, attorneys, realtors making decisions more on, I want closure versus anything else. And they're willing to go with the term as long as they get their price and closure, like with the COVID. They don't want people coming in, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason looking back over the last year why we did the number of deals that we did too. I mean, I know that literally sellers were saying that. I don't want people walking through the house. Yeah. They are looking for that, you know, that solution. And we're buying a rehab. The properties are not in great shape. The Colorado example, just to hang on to it for one more second, I assume this thing was like retail-ready condition. It was just a matter of this frozen marketplace there when you guys put it together, right? Is that typically the houses you guys are doing deals on are not probably Dan Breslin's, you know, need a total rehab deal? They're a little bit different than that, right?
Yeah, they're usually in good shape, Dan, but now there's always the exception, right? Almost anything I answer, there's an exception. So there's, if we do find a deal that needs work, and some students did some really cool ones this year, they buy it subject to the existing financing. They leave everything as is, and they find someone that can walk in, do a rent-own, but needs that pathway for rent-own and is handy. So, but it's just not like our base model, but we can handle it and can do quite well with it.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, I actually did try to go into the Boulder, Colorado market, I think 3 or 4 years back, and we did some advertising and we tried our business model. And like I said, Chris, my business model is focused on these houses that need repairs. You just sell it as is, right? This is my niche. This is what we're good at. We're rehabbing houses and we're looking for the investor product that, quite frankly, you know, it's not going to be in livable condition usually. And what I found was, and this is my anecdotal perception of the Colorado market, less inventory, smaller population, and a significantly younger housing stock there, so that, you know, our sell it as is value proposition didn't really ring valuable with anybody like it does in Philly, where these houses are 100, 150 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 80, 90 on average. So it's kind of feels like the terms deals are much more effective, especially if I'm in an area with younger housing stock that doesn't really need gut renovations and brought up to modern. Am I correct in that, Chris?
Yeah. You hit it on the head. There's no question. That is the base model, and of course, there's always these offshoots.
So one more moment on the pandemic here. I'm gonna talk mindset here for a minute, Chris, because I know you're a big purposeful coach for people who are in your organization and people who you're associated with around the country. You're a mindset guy. And I remember in the pandemic, it hits. I have this picture of, I think it's a Rembrandt, a stolen Rembrandt. I don't have the stolen Rembrandt, but the one that was in the museum got stolen. So it's missing from the art world. I hope my house doesn't get raided and they think it's, you know, but anyway, it's a print. It's on the wall. And it's of Jesus, and he's in the boat with his apostles. And Rembrandt's actually in the photo there, so it's like this 13th apostle, which is weird. Jesus is calm, and I'm like sitting there eating my breakfast, and I look up, and there's like the storm, and Jesus is calm, and that's kind of like the, you know, it was a moment. The pandemic was starting to unfold. They shut everything down. I didn't know what was going to happen as far as closings. Is humanity going to survive this thing? It was kind of like this. It was a storm, right, for me and for a lot of people out there. The uncertainty that we had, it was very paralyzing for a brief moment. And that moment, Chris, if I'm being frank, was probably a week, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And I'm leading my team, and I'm not sure what I'm going to say, but I'm saying it's going to be good, and I'm trying to find a way through. And I remember I had this personal moment of transition. It was like flipping a switch, Chris. It was like all of a sudden that, you know, I'm looking at the painting and that like momentary kind of like freezing and panic almost, not like crippling or anything. I was sleeping okay at night. But all of a sudden I decided, oh, this is just like normally for me, it's December. This is the time of year. Real estate activity quiets down, and I go into innovation mode. You know, it's like I redesign my business, I review the processes, we, get our coaching right, we get our habits right for the chaos that occurs for us in March, April, May as the spring market starts to happen. And every year is this rebirth during that. Well, it was April 1st for us, and it was supposed to be the busy season, and suddenly we were grounded again. And I had the momentary flip of the switch where I said, okay, I will use this time like a gift, and this will be our innovation. We'll have another innovation season here right now, April, May, however long this lasts, assuming that I and the people that I know and care for and everyone around us has a high survival rate of the pandemic. And I know that not a lot, that's not going to be everybody's story in the entire country or the entire world, but it has been so far for us. But that moment I decided to like make the best of the situation as it was like for me personally, this big like, the clouds cleared in my mind and all of a sudden I could like work. And then when I was busy working, I wasn't worrying about what was going to occur. And like we went from that moment forward and it was like a snowball and things started to get better and better. Did you happen to have any questionable moments or things of that nature at any point during the pandemic, or maybe you witnessed it if it wasn't for you personally that you were able to maybe guide people through mindset wise?
Well, okay, a bunch of things came to mind because you used the word storm, which I use all the time. This is pretty cool. And we didn't talk before. So nice. What I saw, you have the old fight or flight, right? And then what I saw during especially the very beginning was freeze. There was like a third one. It was freeze. And it's like the worst thing you could do in business. So what became super, super prevalent and in need was clarity and a guide. Like people just needed a guide. They didn't know what. They just needed a guide and they needed clarity. So I started going after a couple of things. I wasn't, to be honest with you, panicking because after the 08 crash, if you remember my story, we built this sort of niche. We trademarked, we're in the midst of right now, trademarking the three paydays. Like it was all built for sort of chaos, obviously not this level and didn't know this would happen, but it was built to weather storms because of what I went through in 08. So then I said, okay, fine. So we grabbed five amazing entrepreneurs that went through different storms in their career, and we just did a five-series podcast called Thriving in Chaos. So it got not only the audience got a chance to mentally have kind of like some clarity and a guide, but it gave us an amazing, like when you interview people, there's some amazing ahas and nuggets that come out of that. So just doing the Thriving in Chaos series was an amazing experience for me. So it kept me centered and it kept me clear. And then the third thing I talked about then, and I actually talked about it again this week, coincidental to you saying storm, is I talked about the perfect storm. And people say, what do you mean during this? You said, yeah. So the perfect storm is, if you looked at a triangle, number one is being part of, especially during this time, part of a movement. And part of a movement, the second side of the triangle would be part of a movement that actually affects lives positively in our own lives and doing it. And then third, being part of the movement, being part of a movement that affects lives. And third, getting paid real well because of it. Those are the three sides of the triangle. And it's sort of like the perfect storm or the perfect triangle, if you will. So that's what we focused on. Like I kept screaming that and ranting that and talking about that and focusing on that so that the buyers, the sellers, and the investors would have clarity. And it seemed to work because the niche not just survived, it thrived. And then, of course, that gave the, we call them associates, but our students who we lock arms with and do deals and rev share with, that gave them kind of some empowerment. And the whole thing just started parlaying into what we are now, ending a great year like you. And so that for us, it was the utmost clarity and not getting caught up in that freeze state, but instead just kind of the flight, fight, flight, and freeze. So anyway, I could go on that, but I love the fact that you used storm to piece this together.
Yeah, and I think that I would probably, just describe that as freeze. I remember it. It was frozen. Mm. I don't remember if it was for 1 or 2 days or if it was for 10 days. It was not a long time. And that decision to like move and mobilize and then use the moment, right? It was like, okay, we got downtime. So now it's time to make sure that we invest this time and make it productive.
Yeah, I mean, well, what choice do we have if you think about it? I'm not saying everybody had time to pre-think this, but what choice do you really have when you talk about the fight, flight, or freeze? It's awful to be in that freeze mode. I'm not so naive to not think people went through it and they couldn't change it, right? I understand that. But you have restaurants, for example, to use a crazy example on a real estate show. You had restaurants that were crippled, but you had restaurants that thrived because they got over-the-top resourceful and creative, like still to this day. And so it does take a little extra resourcefulness and a little extra guidance and clarity, certainly, to my earlier point.
Yeah, you're right about that. So let's talk about how to invest in real estate with no money down, right? So we're doing terms deals, and I kind of know that there's a lot of like background on doing them. The $1.3 million or any example, how often are your students doing these terms deals, Chris, putting large chunks of their own cash at risk in the deal?
They don't, and I'll give you a very, very direct example. I'm big on, as you probably remember, I like giving you real stuff, like real examples that we're doing. We had, right before the shutdown, our last live event in the ballroom, and we had the associates stand up who had deals, and then we started sitting them down if they had put a deposit down. In that room at the last QLS event was almost $80 million in controlled real estate, and there was not $2,500, in excess of $2,500 put down on those properties total. So the lease purchases are 10 bucks. The owner financing deals, they use you 100 bucks, and if they do it in an IRA, it might be 500. And there was not any cash out of their pocket down, or minimal. You know, $10 is written in the agreement. Whether it transfers or not, I don't know, but it's written in for 10 bucks. So we just don't put our own cash down. Now, are there exceptions, Dan, like everything else I've said today? Yeah. If there's someone in arrears and you're going to pick up a whole bunch of equity and you got to put up $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 from another deal that you might have on these three paydays that we do, sure. But by and large, especially if you're new, there's no money going down in these deals.
Do you think it would be wise for somebody listening right now, Chris, and they're thinking like, man, I like what Chris is saying. This REI terms business here, this is for me. I don't have any money. Now, I'll also give you some context, Chris. Like when I got into the business, like I had $100, no job, and was like living at my mom's house. And like for me, it just seemed near impossible to get into any deals. Now, I did do these like $10, put, you know, like no money down and did a bunch of assignments to kind of get started early on back in 2006. But it was super risky, right? And I probably took a back seat or didn't have the confidence to move forward because like I didn't have any kind of cash to back it up. Is there a certain threshold of like, hey, I'm getting into this thing and I don't have any money? Like, should someone have like $10,000 available? Should there be like maybe $40,000 or $50,000 available? Like, what's the real like kind of budget for someone, you know, especially like, you know, people who quit their job and then start real estate?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have a job to quit. I had $100, right? And I had no other resources. I would probably feel like there's probably some level of getting ready to have a little bit of money in the bank, or am I like totally off base with that?
No, you're not off base. I mean, look, it's a business, right? So I guess the answer is somewhat weighted and contingent upon what their goals and expectations are. Super important that I qualify this, because I have, and I'll use real stories. I have a student that lives in Alaska, buys property in Seattle, has just completed his third deal, and literally had to put vegetable oil in a bus to come here originally for his first day. I mean, crazy stories. It's on Facebook. We interviewed him. So, and then you have the other people that come from corporate. They're tired of COVID. We have one gentleman that has not gone on a plane since March. He's tickled pink, and he's since gone full-time with us. Okay, but he had a 401k and a nest egg, and he could leverage some of that to not buy deals, to not put deposits on deals, but to get his website set up, to get his coaching program set up, to, you know, get his system set up. In general, though, I'll give you a hard number. It costs anywhere between $560 and $1,000 monthly, ongoing, as far as overhead, quote unquote, to run this terms business up to about a deal a month. Well, that's super lucrative when you look at our three payday system, Dan. We average around $75,000 all three paydays. Students go upwards of $250,000. We're actually in the lower end of the averages of our family team. So you start talking about deals like that where you're not doing gobs of mailing, you're not spending a big amount on overhead, and you can go out and do three paydays of $75,000 and up. It's pretty cool. So I've seen broke to nice buffer and started. It just depends on your goals and your expectations.
Yeah, I wish somebody would have told me that back in 2006. I didn't know how much was, you know, an expected overhead amount in the business. And a lot of the resources today, they're available online, cloud programs, you know, mailing lists here, website hosting there. That really wasn't there in 2006. So it was probably hard to get a gauge on that. But knowing like, hey, this is $1,000 a month commitment at the low end to be in the business of doing this, and probably successful real estate agents, right? Just selling and buying, you know, houses representing clients. their overhead is also probably around that much. And, you know, I think it's just smart to recognize that there's going to be this rolling cost and there's going to be this investment in self to get it done. So you bring up an interesting direction, which I'd like to go a little bit, Chris. You said yours is an average of $75,000 per deal. I love talking about real estate markets and trying to get context and perspective of different markets, different places around the country from the guests who come on the show. So if we say that Chris is doing them in the Rhode Island, Connecticut area, and it's $75,000 a deal, but you got students doing $250,000 per deal, where is that? What price point are those houses that they're operating? Can we shed some light on that? And maybe there's also on the low end, maybe you have a student whose the averages are, I don't know, 45, 55, 65, and that's in a certain market and price point. Just to kind of give context, if someone's in a certain market throughout the country,
yeah,
they might be able to look around and know, okay, this is what might be expected here. Oh, I got to get in the van, put the vegetable oil in, and I got to drive down to such and such
nice,
a market to go make
nice
any
tie.
Money.
Yeah. Okay, two answers here. This is interesting. One is certainly market driven by price range. So, for example, Chad in Colorado, who I mentioned, is going to be in that 500 to 1.3 range, and he's going to be six-figure deals. Bill in D.C., same, you know, six-figure deals. Because the price range is so high, his is like 800 to 1.8. Now, the caveat here is you can be in, let's say, I got someone in Phoenix that they're in the lower end, like more like 45, 50, just because of what they go after out there. However, regardless of the market, if you're doing these owner financing deals that I alluded to earlier, whereby you're getting monthly principal pay down, we have seen deals, Dan, like I did one in Massachusetts, 183.9 purchase, 128 grand, all three paydays. Why? All principal pay down. The thing pays itself down. So it's market driven, yes, but then deal type of deal driven as well, be it owner financing, is going to be a lot higher. I'll even put a metric to this. Regardless of what market you're in, if you do a deal that's owner financing, that's at least $200,000 or higher purchase price, and you get at least a 48-month term, and you're paying about $900 or more per month principal payment, our three paydays is over six figures. Now, that's crazy for most people to fathom. It's because of the owner financing component and how we build it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I've invested in the system already, Chris. I've done that, and we put these deals together. And, you know, when I first hear this, or so let's say we have a sophisticated investor and they're thinking, who the hell is going to go for a principal pay down of $900 a month and not want interest on that? But, you know, the type of seller, the type of situation, type of price point, can you fill in a little more context of who would maybe accept that? Like, I've seen it done already myself in my own markets when you're talking to the right seller. So I know that it's possible and that you're doing it. But can you give some context if someone's kind of thinking it? This is just, Chris, it's unbelievable that someone would allow, you know, 48 months worth of pay down with no interest. Or it is no interest, right?
Yeah, that one is. I'll give you some quasi kind of combination deals too. But let's address the first question is kind of who. The bottom line is anyone that does not need the cash today that wants the best price. And a lot of people that are free and clear, we're dealing with free and clear properties, we can find those lists, right? So if they're free and clear, by nature being free and clear, they didn't need the money. They didn't put a loan on it, right? So they're typically financially savvy and set up well and want the best price. Some of it is tax planning. They want the tax planning over time. Direct example, my own office building, we bought owner financing. He wanted 5.2% interest. I wanted principal only. We did a combination. I did principal only, and I hammered it for about 12 or 13 months, maybe it was 14, then it converted with the remaining balance to 5% interest amortized over 25 years. I'll never see a bank. I'll never go through underwriting. I'll never sign personally. That's a pretty cool deal. So it just depends on the scenario. Who doesn't it work for is easier to say. That's a small number, and that is anyone that needs the money today to go buy something else for their family or other reason, they just can't wait no matter what price you give them right now. That's the only person that doesn't work for.
So they need the cash now, which is exactly the sellers that I do business with on a regular basis. They need that. We're helping them move. We're helping them find the next apartment. We're, you know, renting the moving truck or going above and beyond. So we're in these two different kind of markets and niches, if you will. So, Chris, you mentioned a moment ago, and I think that I glazed over it, and maybe the listener did too, or maybe they caught it. And we go back and you said something to the effect of, $560 to $1,000 a month without these huge advertising and huge mailing costs. And most of us in real estate business are sending out letters, we're doing advertising, and we're spending gobs and gobs of money to get the leads in the door. How the hell do you get the deals without more than $1,000 a month for running the business?
Yeah, so most of that thousand, and I'm rounding up on that number, Dan, not down. Most of that thousand is a virtual assistant that's going to cost them about $100 to $120 a week. That virtual assistant's going to call expireds for rent by owner and for sale by owner. They're going to spit back to us only the people that said, mediocre, maybe I'll hear more, or yes, I want to hear more, and we're going to call them. The only one we won't call is no get lost, right? But we'll call anyone that's at least open to hearing how it might work for them. And so about anywhere between 30 and 50% of the calls they make are going to be open, somewhat open, not definitive yet, to terms, and we're going to go ahead and call them. So mostly virtual assistant. The rest is ringless phone systems and different CRMs. And so that's why I rounded up. I mean, most of our people are sitting around $500 or $600 to start off. And that does not include a website, right? If they got to buy a website, then that's kind of probably a flat fee. I don't do monthly fees or anything like that on a website. It's not my business.
Gotcha. What about on the high end? I mean, do you or some of your students have a more than $1,000 a month setup? I mean, if you got four or five VAs, it's probably $4,000 or $5,000, right?
Yeah, once you scale. So, okay, so that's why I said one a month. So once you get to about one a month and I see you doing that steady, probably by the third or fourth month, I'm going to have the conversation with you for one of our students. And the conversation's around, is this going to get you to your goals or are you looking to scale this? If you're looking to scale it, I'm going to strongly suggest they get an executive assistant for themselves to get themselves away from all the mundane stuff. That executive assistant's going to cost them $20 an hour. I'm giving you round numbers that we use. And then I'm going to suggest they start with about 10 hours a week on that. So they can remove themselves from the mundane. And as soon as they do that, 2 or 3 months out, at the most, they realize the productivity deficiency and they transition that to full time. And then away they go, they start scaling. So now you're going to probably get up to the anywhere between the $2,000 and $4,000 a month. But keep in mind, you're talking now firing like two deals a month at these averages we're talking about. It's crazy return.
Yeah, you're right about that. Is there a price point where this does not work or you advise students to stay away from, too low or too high?
Never too low and too high. The issue becomes how quickly can you move it? Even though you're going to a much bigger buyer pool, i.e. those that can't get a loan today, and that's a big, big pool, and you start talking about jumbo loans, once you get over, in my experience, once you get over that $2.5 million, certainly over three, it's thin pickings. It just is. Some people hate banks in that price range, and they gobble it up if it's an ideal property, but it is a lot slower. And if someone's building their model based on just high end, it could be slow. I'd rather have them in any given market in their median price range. Those things are going to move all day long on terms, Dan. I mean, before COVID, I was seeing in every marketplace, I was guesstimating about 62 to 82% of the buyer pool not being able to get financing if you took a snapshot of their situation today. Well, now post-COVID, it's worse. People that are really strong can't go get a loan. And so we've got an enormous buyer pool. If you hover in that median price range, you're looking really good.
Yeah, I don't do real estate agency, Chris, but like a lot of the mindset shocks me, I think, sometimes with real estate agents.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we're throwing our face on the bus stop bench in some neighborhood. And it's like, was any thought ever given to the size of the marketplace and then the size of the commission, perhaps, of the deal, right? It's like,
right,
you're going to sell real estate. Go out and sell $350,000, $450,000 houses. Find out where they're all at. Go check the MLS and see that there's a volume of those transactions actually happening versus, you know, being kind of like, like a moth to the flame sort of like a multi-million dollar neighborhood. Like you're just going to like market to this for hopes of big commissions. But then you get the listing and it's impossible to sell the thing because the buyer pool of $2.5-3 million homes is so finicky of people who are actually going to stroke the check. And like you said, it's still probably relatively finicky, even if you've got the larger marketplace of the terms deals in that price point versus the median home that's in the $200,000 to $300,000 to $400,000 range, where there's a huge volume. The bulk of the market exists in that price point, whether we're talking about conventional buyers or whether we're talking about terms buyers, right?
Yeah, and just you brought up a kind of a side point indirectly here that made me think of when you said just this whole thing of real. I mean, I was a realtor for years. I did 100 homes a year as a realtor, so I get both sides. I'm not poo-pooing on the realtors at all. But what I will say is we get referrals from realtors that don't know what to do with properties during this chaos. And in our paydays, I just showed one on a webinar this morning to a group in Canada called First Responders. And the 3 days, three paydays for us was like $82,000. And this realtor let it expire and then gave it to us. Man, oh man, why don't you learn how to buy and sell on terms and then put yourself as the authority in the realtor space that can pivot in this type of market? That's how you differentiate yourself. So just a shout out to, if there's any realtors listening, that's a, it's a no brainer to do that and differentiate yourself above the crowd.
Yeah. Big part of that comes in mindset, you know, being creative enough to, or even believing in yourself enough that your service and value and locking in the paperwork and managing all the little nuance of a buyer and seller in the transaction while sketching out your $82,000 payday. I mean, it takes a certain amount of confidence. And I think that's probably one of the intangible things that you gain when you align yourself with someone else who's already doing it, is you can kind of lean on the mind map, if you will, of structuring those handful of deals before you suddenly are able to go into said same expired living room of a house and listing and then put together that same structure of a deal.
Well, I mean, you brought up mindset a few times. Mindset is so enormous in real estate. And the direct example, again, I'll give you is, so I love that you're bringing it up. The direct example is, why do we have students still to this day, as much as we focus on mindset now, why do we have students that all take the same exact course, same thing online, academy, but some come out of the gate. We just had one last week, 41 days they do their first deal, and others take 365 days. What gives? Usually, if it's not scheduled, usually all things being equal, it's mindset. And I know that's a broad topic. People go, okay, that's a little woo-woo, it's mindset. But we bring every single coach we personally use that we've had good results with, we bring to the community and go, hey, guys, we've used this person. Now you can use them. Here's their information. We do that all the time. We brought Joe Vitale from the movie The Secret in. We did a program with him because we've had success with him. So we do that constantly, knowing how important the mindset is. So, yeah, I mean, every piece of the mindset you brought up is spot on.
Yeah, it's so funny, like looking back even over my own thing, Chris, and, you know, my own story there. And like, I didn't want to hear about mindset. I didn't want to hear about Tony Robbins. You know, they said set goals. So I like tried to do that. Like, I didn't want that. I just wanted to be able to pay my bills, get a car, or move out of my mom's house. Like, just tell me how to make the damn money. Right. But my mentor, who's been most influential in my life, even to this day, it's, you know, it's one of the main pillars of the things that he teaches me on a regular basis, is these different mindset tweaks. And I'm surprised at how many times that people around me who we even all subscribe to a culture of growth at Diamond Equity at our company. Like, we're about self-improvement. We're about continuously learning. We're about, you know, setting and forecasting our goals and doing the work to get there. And so, like, we do all this stuff. And even at the leadership level, I'm surprised at how sometimes there's these, like, mindset tweaks and challenges, these blind spots that crop up. And I think that if we weren't in such a nice formed partnership at our company with the people who I do business with, and instead, like with me, when I was out there on my own and I was kind of like, you know, running my own thing, doing the deal from start to finish and splitting the deal with no one versus splitting it with all the people that I do split my deals with, I would go into those blind spots of like the mindset black hole, if you will, Chris. And it might be a 3 month, 6 month, 8 month thing before I finally find and snap myself out. Whereas people on my team now, because we're part of this culture at our company, we're able to like recognize the blind spot much quicker. Like, we might find someone's off base for a week or two, you know, a month or two, and we're able to like, whoa, we got to be aware of this thing. And now we like construct a plan and we get back to right where we were before. So one of the intangible benefits, I think, of surrounding yourself or aligning yourself with people in the deals that you're doing, who have your interests at heart, you know, and are all working toward the same thing and all subscribe to, you know, that culture of mindset, that culture of improvement. I just feel so blessed that we have that and that my mentor has been able to kind of keep that woo-woo BS, don't want to hear that, you know, kind of stuff for me to like embrace it. And then I'm surprised again how I sometimes can forget that, even at my level, and have to be reminded through materials, books, and everything, and that constant improvement. But, yeah, it's a shock and the awareness at the same time.
Yeah, and I think you alluded to, I couldn't agree more. Our team does the same, and you alluded to in some shape, form, or fashion their association. So, I mean, I always say, make no doubt about it, the association, especially as we're entering a new year, or by the time this comes out, we are in a new year. Association is enormous. It affects you more than you think. So aside from all those things you just said that are spot on, add to that the fact that you're associated with someone doing that with you, for you, you know, guiding you through that, and now you're passing it on to your team. It is enormous. So every single year we'll look up and say, okay, next quarter, next trimester, next half year, next year, who is it that we're going to reach out to? And I encourage my students, who is it that you want to reach out to? Who is it that you want to meet? Who is it that you want to up level with? Because it does make a big difference. Your income will never, ever, ever outgrow you, meaning your skill set, your mindset, everything. It just can't. And if your income takes a jump on accident and it surpasses your norm, well, it's going to come back down. Ed Milet calls it a thermostat. I just say it can't outgrow you. It'll come back down. So you got to constantly develop yourself.
Yeah, and I remember I signed this deal up. This is probably 10, 15 years ago. I signed up this deal. I'm going to pay $5,000 to the girl that brought us the deal. I don't remember what the numbers were, but I remember I bring it back to my partner. Oh, man, it's in good shape. You know, it's like it's a little dated, but this thing is like it's a good house. It's got a pool in the back. It's like a great house. I loved it. Why don't we sell it we'll sell it for $10,000 more than what we have it for. And, you know, this is a great example of actual real money where the guy that I was associated with and in business with, I don't remember if he even said anything to me or he might have just gone off and sold it for $45,000 more. And like his idea, you know, his mental mind map of like we were mentioning with the 82 grand being structured into the deal, like he knew there was more value there. He spotted more. He believed there was more value there. Rather than I was ready to give it away for 10. So like by bringing the deal to the table with that partner, I would have been happy to split the 10. But instead, we each, I think, walked away with a $20,000 check there at the end of the day. So, you know, aligning yourself with those correct associates there. I mean, there's a real world example that actually did end up specifically in more money as a result of that association, you know?
It's awesome.
Cool. So I have an eye on the clock here. Be respectful of your time there. I know you have a lot of stuff that you've published online, on Forbes, you know, a couple books out. Do you want to kind of touch on a couple book recommendations that you would make most often? And then maybe which books of your own you'd recommend most often?
For me, the books are going to be period in my stage specific, meaning sort of what I said to you about the mentors. I'm going to look this year and say, what books do I need to dive into? So for me as a CEO, it's going to be a little different than, say, one of the team members. But for me right now, I like some of the, I'll give more broader titles like Ray Dalio's Principles and The Hard Stuff About the Hard Stuff. I love those type of books because they're blunt to the point in real life lessons. I also love the age-old McDonald's story Behind the Arches because it's the one that the movie was done off of, Dan. Because it's all about real estate. And if you go through that, it talks about his struggles, his frustrations, his doubt. And then it talks about how he built his empire. It's all real estate. It has nothing to do with McDonald's. So those cool books. And I think I mentioned too before I don't think we were recording. I think it was before the show. Our Real Estate on Your Terms, which was a bestseller in 17, was totally revised. We had planned on revising it. And then it was almost finished right during COVID. So we updated it even more. And added about 50% of the to the content, so it's out, it's on Amazon, and it's very, very current after COVID.
Nice. So what's the best route listeners should take to get themselves up to speed on anything that we were talking about today?
You know, if they just jump over, let's keep it super, super simple. Just jump over to REIterms.com. That's going to get them over to take a peek at the academy. And anything else they want as far as digging in. Look, we're big on free. You and I both know they can go find stuff free anywhere on the internet. But if this niche is something you think you want to dig into after you do your research and due diligence, jump over to reiterms.com and you'll find the academy.
Nice. And in closing, Chris, is there anything that we forgot to touch on? Questions that I forgot to maybe ask that you feel like the listeners should know about before we wrap up?
Real simple, because I want to make sure, like what I said earlier about the guide and the clarity, I want to make sure people know, regardless of the niche, I'm not so naive to think I'm the only niche, right? You and I both do some really cool things in different niches. Regardless of the niche, just do three simple steps. Number one,
picked a niche, right? Something you can really get behind. Whether you love the three paydays or you love doing flips or you love doing big apartments, doesn't matter. Pick the niche. Second, pick someone that's been through some storms and some market cycles. I cannot stress this one enough. That the success is a really shitty teacher, unfortunately. So if you're taking a mentor that had some great success in the last 3 years, that might be good now. But I would strongly suggest you find someone that's been through some storms and some market cycles that you can get behind, that's still currently active. And then third, this is the tougher one, easier said than done. Put the blinders on for 36 months. Don't look left, right, or backwards. Don't get tripped up by the shiny objects. And go at it with whoever that person, group, or thing is that you're following, because you will have a great experience. I don't care if you're running a restaurant in real estate, whatever industry you're in, those three steps, you will have success.
Man, that's impactful. I was taking notes there. Pick the niche, pick someone that's doing it who's been through some storms, and then stick with it for 36 months. I mean, you know, we hear this shiny object syndrome, and I've like chased that myself, but until I buckled down and did what was in front of me, where I was starting to get a little bit of success early on, and then really staying with that obsessively, you know, Napoleon Hill's burning obsession there, yep. Sticking with it, figuring out the details, making it work. And like, man, at the end of the 36 month period that I'm thinking of, wow, there was no looking back. I didn't want to get out of the niche. You know what I mean? It didn't look like everyone else's niche was doing better than mine, for sure. Solid stuff there. Chris, I had a blast. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me back. Always good to hang out with some cool, experienced people. I appreciate it.
Low-cost capital is the fuel of any volume real estate investment business. As a real estate investor, I am sure you're well aware of these two facts. First, your business is driven by access to capital, or starved from a lack thereof. And two, you make more money when you reduce the cost of said capital. Whether you're looking for hard money loans to fix and flip houses, rental portfolio loans, or even a line of credit, Lending Home offers the most competitive rates in the market, currently as low as 6.49%, which is good for fix and flip single family loans. I pay 10% myself at fundrehabdeals.com to my private investors. So at 6.49%, if you like that interest rate, go to reilineofcredit.com. Even if you're not currently in the market for a loan at this very minute, I encourage you to still go through that 1 minute sign-up process right now so you can get on the email list. That way, once you're ready and you have a deal or a few, their name is top of mind. Plus, as a bonus for signing up through reilineofcredit.com, you'll receive a free iPad when you close your first loan. That's reilineofcredit.com. Thanks again for tuning in. Remember to review and subscribe the REI Diamond Show on your podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. To receive the episode highlights via email, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com. At that site, you can also access the entire episode archive of Wealth Building Real Estate Investment Jewels of Wisdom. Again, that's reidiamonds.com. So in 2020, my house flipping business, Diamond Equity Investments, generated more than $8 million in profit from 283 deals. Our acquisition managers are expected to earn between $150,000 to $300,000 per year or more with zero overhead. We provide the leads and have the capital to close deals. Right now, I am actually looking to add one more acquisition manager in each Atlanta, Chicago, and Philadelphia. If you'd like to express interest or would like further detail, please go to www.dealswithroi.com/careers. Be sure to mention the REI Diamond Show in your cover letter. Here are three more ways that you and I can do business. Number one, are you interested in having access to the best real estate deals in your market? In other words, access to deals you can buy at low enough prices to actually profit after renovating and reselling. If so, go now to accessrealestatedeals.com. Number two, are you an accredited investor who enjoys double-digit returns? If you'd like to potentially invest passively in my real estate deals, go to fundrehabdeals.com and sign up to receive my private mortgage investment opportunity emails. Number three, of course, I am always buying houses that I can flip and occupied apartment buildings with below market rents. If you have a deal that fits that description in either Atlanta, Chicago, or the Philadelphia region, please send me an email with those details. We are at the conclusion, my friend. Next up, we discuss how to find off-market real estate deals with Zach Booth. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.